Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Phoenix Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to Phoenix Business Radio, broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studio inside Max 6 Workspace and the Conscious Capitalism Arizona headquarters inside Tempe, Arizona, where we help build businesses and connect you with the right people. I'm Karen Nowicki, and I'm very much looking forward to our conversation today. My husband and I and our kids, about 2 months ago, ventured out to a restaurant in South Chandler, Ocotillo area. We'll get more clear about that in a second, but it's a restaurant called Farm Boy Market Meats and Sandwiches. And Mike had seen people bragging about it on Facebook. And he's like, we've got to get over to this restaurant. So we were there and we fell in love with it so much so that the sweet gal, I think she might've been a general manager, was asking how we enjoyed our meal. And with that, I mentioned, you know, I've got this little thing that I do called Business Radio X, and I would love to get the owner on for a conversation. So with that very long-winded introduction, I'd like to introduce you to Oren Molovinsky, the owner of Farm Boy Market Meats and Sandwiches. Welcome, Oren.
Oh, thank you, Karen. Great to be on.
Yes, very happy. And am I right with the vicinity as far as where you're located? Are you South Chandler?
Yeah, South Chandler, and the neighborhood or the community there is referred to as Ocotillo.
Okay, yes. Good. I Mike did the driving. I just was hungry. My tummy was grumbling. And so with Oren and I today, I also said to Oren, like, who, you know, tell me a little bit about the, and we'll get into this, you know, tell me about where the idea from the restaurant came and who are you outside of the restaurant? Because what we like to do here on Business Radio X is have these fireside chat conversations to really up-level our awareness as a community here in Arizona about different verticals and industries. This one being a conversation really around the importance of farm and keeping things local. So Oren said, I know exactly who I need to bring to the studio with me. And that's Deborah Burnett, Chief of Beef with Arizona Grass-Raised Beef Company. Welcome, Deborah.
Thank you so much.
That is a great title, Chief of Beef.
Well, somebody has to be up, right?
Right, exactly. So we haven't had a chance to talk outside of maybe just a few minutes coming into the studio, but I mentioned as you were coming in, and I know your partner mentioned that Mike and I were at the Old Town Scottsdale Farmers Market this past weekend, and I was talking to another vendor, and right next to me, I'm like, oh gosh, that name looks familiar, and it was sure enough a booth on behalf of your company. So let's have me pause and let both of you share with our listeners who you are and a little bit about your businesses, and then we'll go a little bit deeper. Oren, can you kick it off for us?
Of course. Thank you. I'm a restaurateur. I have been my whole career. And early on in my career, I learned how to operate restaurants, mm-hmm. quite frankly. And but over the years, I began to understand a little bit about where our food was coming from for particular restaurants that I was operating. So it became a passion of mine over the years to source the greatest food I could find. And that led me to this path of actually beating the door down of farmers, literally, and saying, hey, can I buy this from you? Because I want to know exactly where my food is coming from my guests. So that's a little bit of background on, in a nutshell, of you know, my growth and how we got to this concept. Farm Boy is really a culmination of many restaurants I've operated or owned in the past. And I feel it embodies the best of all of those. I wanted to create a concept that allowed us to have to work with farmers and utilize anything, not that we wanted as restaurateurs and chefs, but to go to the farmer and say, what is it that you need us to serve? The concept really allows us to be as creative as we need to be to serve that product and help the farmer do a great job farming and make some money farming and have a great outlet for their products and for us to be able to provide a very easy, accessible restaurant experience for guests to come to multiple times a week. So that's in general the idea behind Farm Boy.
Love it. You've been in restaurant for a very long time in the industry. Is this the first one you've owned, or you've owned other restaurants?
I have owned other restaurants, yeah. They've always been, whenever I've owned or operated a restaurant. I still own one in the East Coast in Virginia. I'm from the Washington, D.C. area.
Okay.
And they're passion projects. It's almost like, I hate to say it, the profits don't matter. It's more about, I want to do the right thing here. And I don't ever want to stray off course of what our passion is for this restaurant.
Love that.
So Farm Boy is very much that. There's a very strong purpose behind it. We're never going to stray from that. No matter what pressures we feel, we know that we're on the right course and we need to stay on it.
Excellent. And tell me, before we turn it over to Deborah, tell us about your relationship with Deborah's company.
I always say, I tell folks, we had a wine dinner last night, and I tell folks the same story. I come from Virginia, and we have the Shenandoah Valley, wonderful farming community that goes back literally to the, before the establishment of the United States. And it was very easy to find great farms and farmers in Virginia. When I moved to Arizona in 2011, I immediately started seeking out folks, even though I didn't own a restaurant yet, I knew it was something I wanted to do. So I just started doing research and, here's this website, Arizona Grass-Raised Beef. I was like, well, it sounds good.
Yeah.
And then I see Deb's name up there, Chief of Beef, and I reached out and I was so impressed that everything I had hoped Arizona Grass-Raised Beef would be,
it was,
and even more so. And so it was like love at first sight, not with Deb, but with
okay.
the company. it was very easy, and found probably the best beef I've ever worked with in my life. And we've worked with a lot of beef from a lot of different countries,
yeah.
and it's right here in our backyard. So it was wonderful and easy.
Gosh, are there any blanks to fill in for us? That was quite a
nice.
Sweet introduction. So back us up. It's great that we now know the connection between you, Oren, and Farm Boy, but get us caught up as to who your company is and how you found your way to leading this company.
Well, like Oren, I started out in the business of representing commercial beef, pork, when I was much younger. Before I got married, that was my business out of college. And then I took a large break and had some kids, and back to, we started ranching about 10 years ago, my husband and I, and a partner, Tim Peterson. And so things, one thing turned into another. We started having some cattle processed at a different place, and I wasn't happy. Everybody else was kind of happy. I was not happy. I was just like, these cuts are not what we could be. This is not as good as it could be. So we opened our own USDA plant here in Chino Valley, Arizona. And that's where we process all our cattle. And we have some amazing, passionate butchers that are all from outside the United States, frankly, because they were grown up butchering grass-raised cattle.
They're here locally, but they are transplants, you're saying.
Yes, mm-hmm. Exactly. And they're just passionate people about doing the right thing. It's a beautiful experience having people that care that much about the animals, people that care that much about their craft.
I was thinking the word art when I was getting this picture of who these folks are on your team. There's an art to it, and you have to be passionate and loving when you do this, right?
Oh, for sure. You know, we've only been doing this part of the business for about 3.5 years. But like Oren, this is a huge passion of mine. I mean, it's certainly not for the money. It's for doing the right thing. It's something that I just can't give up on. I just think it's something that needs to be done for the community and for all of us, and for the animals, for the environment, for the community. It's really a positive experience for everyone.
So you've hit on a couple highlights as to what makes you guys unique. Is there anything else that you hadn't told us that's, that's amazing. The way that they're raised, how they're cared for, even the cuts of meat with the butchers, your relationships with, I'm going to call them vendors for lack of a better word.
Exactly.
Partners. Anything else that...
I mean, the thing that makes us probably the most unique in Arizona is that we're 100% grass-fed and grass-finished. And that's a little bit different than what everyone does. A lot of, most, all ranchers raise their cattle on grass initially, but most of them are finished on grain of some type.
Yeah, what does finished mean?
They spend the last part of their lives either in a feedlot eating grain or whatever else they're feeding. And our cattle are out to pasture or roaming on huge, vast land in Arizona. And so they are foraging for their own food. They're eating native grasses all the time. They're drinking water and getting sunshine. So it's not
all the way through.
All the way through. And they're breeding naturally. They're calving naturally in their own environment. And we think that that kind of lifestyle for them produces by far the best beef that you can buy.
Taste-wise, but also even nutrient-wise and health-wise?
Yes, for sure.
Yeah, Oren's nodding his head like, yes, absolutely.
Well, I've had some testing done, actually. I was just talking to Oren about this most recently. Some of the numbers on our cattle are significantly different than what you can buy commercially most anywhere. So it is like I said, good for people, good for the environment. It's a win-win.
How can raising cattle be environmentally friendly? I mean, is it just the way you've described that this you have the land and you let them roam? What else goes into making that important for all of us?
Well, and I think that's a misconception for everyone. So certainly having cattle in a feedlot is not beneficial for them, us, or the environment. I think we're all familiar with that and how much water it takes to raise them and our process and all the equations that go along with it. But having cattle where they have a vast amount of land to spread out, I mean, they're naturally fertilizing the land. The land's coming back to life. If you go to some of our ranches, you wouldn't believe how green it is just for that real reason. The sunshine, the water from the sky, and the cattle walking on the land, fertilizing the land, it's a win-win. And it's just not, there's nothing to be said bad about it.
So that reminds me of something, Oren, that you and I talked about on the phone. We were kind of anticipating an opportunity to have you be on air with us. You were talking a lot about the quality of soil. Mm-hmm. Can you speak a little bit to that, just springboard off of what Deborah was sharing as it relates to beef? But we're talking about also crops and the whole other aspect around farm. I'm going to use the term farm to table, even though it's not your favorite term. But tell us about the soil and what that means for all of us.
Well, so I think Arizona has the opportunity just with some of the farming and ranching that's already being done here, groups like Arizona Grass-Raised Beef and what they're doing, it creates, it's a symbiotic relationship. So when cattle are grazing native grasses and they're roaming kind of like a natural habitat, they're improving the microbial activity in the soil. They're disturbing the soil, not like disturbance in a bad way, like taking a bulldozer to it and building a highway, but disturbance in a good way where their manure is eaten by the soil and the soil absorbs it and becomes healthier. And that in turn creates less erosion and all those wonderful environmental benefits. But I'm a restaurateur. We like to produce great food. So selfishly speaking, what it does for us is it creates an environment where great food is easy to grow. When you have great soil and it starts to permeate throughout regions of the state, then you have better wood growing from there, better shrubs. That creates opportunities for other wildlife, but it also creates better wood than I have a smoker in the restaurant. So by us being able to use wood from the same areas where Deb's cattle are grazing, we create opportunities for dead wood to be removed. The animals, the herbivores are walking through those areas now, improving the microbial activity. And you start to see how it can all work together in this is a very small way, but if agriculture was looked at in this way of following nature's path, all of our food would taste better, and not only taste better, but be much more nutritious for us. And that's what we're really trying to promote, is this symbiotic relationship between agriculture and nature, and allowing us to work within its guidelines instead of us trying to bend them. And that's the beautiful thing about working with Deb and Tim at Arizona Grass-Raised Beef, is they're working with nature and not trying to fight it.
Mm-hmm. And it's as like the way it was supposed to be.
Exactly.
Way back when, before the Industrial Revolution kicked in, right? Mm-hmm. And the other example that I'm thinking of, just in my limited experience with this, I can't help but think about the bees and pollination, how mm-hmm. we keep hearing how important bees are and how they have to pollinate in order to create this symbiotic relationship. And you're speaking to that as well with the crops and the beef, of course. Mm-hmm. Never would have thought that the trees are impacted, but it makes complete sense. It's the way that nature intended it. And exactly. And we wonder why we're having so many difficulties with our digestion and our gut and all of our other issues that we, as a society and really, I think, a nation have, based on how we've changed the way that our food is processed and then eventually served to us.
You don't have to be a health nut to want to eat well. You shouldn't have to make a decision of which restaurant should I go to have a nutritious meal. It just shouldn't be that way. Our mission and the reason we have folks like Deb that we work with is to inspire other restaurateurs and chefs to understand that let's give our guests nutrition and a great meal, something flavorful and tasty, but let's give them something that they can trust and feel good about and not leave with a stomach ache or repercussions the next day because there was too much gluten in something or whatever the case may be. Let's just cook naturally. Folks really appreciate that. We have guests who come into our restaurant and we just want to make the best bread we can. And they say, I haven't had bread in 5 years, but I tried yours yesterday and I didn't feel a thing. You know, that's wonderful. And that they can eat beef again. Our photographer is vegetarian. She went to photograph Arizona grass-raised beef and she started eating beef again, but only from Arizona grass-raised beef.
What a great testimony. I have several friends who travel outside of the country. One in particular goes to Korea quite frequently, and that is the only place, at least at this point, that she's been able to have dairy products, meat, and some of the vegetables again, because mm-hmm. when she's stateside, she has a very strict diet because of everything, how we processed it. So not unsimilar to what you're talking about.
For sure. And that's something that makes things happen for me. That's like one of those things where you just know it's the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's why it's great to have a partner like Oren.
Yeah. So are there other partners that weren't able to be with us here today that are worth, just giving a shout out to in this relationship as you have created Farm Boy and you're just being an advocate for, these rich dining experiences that are healthy and important for our community as well?
Well, sure. I mean, there's a lot of folks who are starting to do it right and who have the right idea. I think it's hard to match the impact that beef has because of the negative impact that you talked about, Deb, of feedlots and concentrated animal feeding operations, CAFOs, or what they're referred to, and the negative consequences on the environment and really on the animals.
And why meat has gotten such a bad rap all these years.
Well, yeah, sure. It's unhealthy. It's cattle eating a fast food diet. So Beef isn't beef anymore. It's now just basically another form of junk food until you make the transition to a real product. So there are other folks who are doing it right with regards to poultry. Like we did a wine dinner with Top Knot Farms yesterday. And Top Knot is a chef, two young brothers down in Benson outside of Tucson, who are really doing it right. They're raising their birds on pasture, ducks and quail, chickens, and it's really amazing what they've been able to accomplish. And there's like nobody else in the state doing what they're doing. And chickens are arguably a lot easier than beef because they're market ready in a few months versus 5 to 6 years potentially. But they're really doing a lot to show that you can raise poultry in a healthy way that helps the soil in their community. But chicken, obviously, we eat a lot of chicken, and now you're eating something that's benefiting you in many ways. And then Crooked Sky Farm is somebody we work with, Farmer Frank. He's kind of a legend in the area.
Yes, and I know the name.
Yeah, he does a wonderful job of bringing back produce, varieties of vegetables and fruits that have long been forgotten, especially in grocery stores. And just following him online is like a treasure trove of knowledge and information about pumpkins and this and that. And he's kind of a produce geek, but he does a wonderful job of preserving farmland. Like he has a 14-acre farm. He's producing organic produce right next to Sky Harbor Airport. To be able to see that we're improving the soil in this, you know, potentially toxic area, you know, what we could do, we could have farms surrounding the airport, you know, that are growing great food.
Wouldn't that be a thing that Arizona could stake their name in?
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
So he's doing wonderful things for our community. He actually bought back an onion, a sweet onion that's better than Vidalia onions, and it was extinct, basically. He had worked with Native Seed Search to save their seeds. And we serve it exclusively at Farm Boy. It's a Glendale Gold onion. It's named after
Glendale Gold. I love it.
What else would it be
named? Right.
So it's such a sweet onion. They're wonderful. They do, you know, you tear up a little bit when you're cutting them. But, you know, how cool is that, that he resurrected an onion that was basically gone, and he named it himself. And so those are the types of folks we're trying to seek out. But in addition to that, hopefully create a market for more entrepreneurs to say, hey, I got to try this farming thing out. I have 3 acres. You can make a living on 3 acres if you're doing, you know, you can't do it with beef, but
yeah. How many acres? So 3 acres compared to how big is the farm?
We have 3 farms. And so one of them is about 100,000 acres. Another one of them is about 25,000 acres. And the last one is right in the neighborhood of 100,000 also. And we've kind of set ourselves up. So we do, we have producer ranchers here in Arizona that also raise cattle, probably about the top 12. I'm stabbing at a number right now, probably about the top 12, but they will produce animals that are grass-fed, same. And they have to be third-party verified through our American Grass-Fed Association certification program. With that in mind, I mean, we have access to cattle on millions of acres, over 6 million acres here in Arizona. It means, to me, the beauty of that means that, you know, we have potential to serve a lot more people healthy beef and feel good about it. And that's kind of where we want to position ourselves, to be in that position to, when it comes along, yay, we can do it. We're not going to be limited by our ability of what we can just always produce out of these 3 ranches.
Love that. And those 3 ranches, to me, just a general layperson, sound huge, but it's great that it becomes a bigger family, a bigger commitment.
And that is something that I love even about our ranches more, is that we run all of our ranches on horseback. We've got cowboys on horseback. And I mean, it's like the Wild West. Mm-hmm. It's the best thing to go out there and see those guys moving cattle around. And they're so knowledgeable. It's just, I'll ask somebody, where are the cattle? Oh, they're way over here. They know exactly where they are. We're going to move them and put them over here. I'm like,
yeah.
Awesome.
Is grass-raised beef more expensive than, I would imagine it'd have to be?
Yes, it is. It, generally speaking, is more expensive, and it has to do with time to market,
sure. If
nothing else. I mean, people would always say, well, you're not buying anything to feed them. Well, no, but normally cattle are killed at a much younger age than we take them to slaughter. It's significantly, it could be well over twice as long.
Oh, wow.
To 3 times as long. So yeah, it definitely is just, it's kind of like holding inventory, if you will.
It begs the conversation that and correct me if I'm wrong, I'm guessing here, but the whole reason that the cattle and beef industry started going more industrial with it was to get a bigger bang for their buck. Let's find a way to automate and to, you know, get it down to the cheapest that we can do it so that we can have a bigger profit margin, right? Mm-hmm. So no wonder why it's cheap, because it isn't healthy.
Well, sometimes I like to say to people too, instead of questioning why it's so expensive, we should probably question why it's so cheap.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Excellent point.
And we have a prominent slogan when you walk into Farm Boy on the wall that says cheap food is an illusion. And it really is, because somebody's for sure. paying for it. You might not be paying for it that day in the grocery store,
but at your doctor or yeah. When talking to the surgeon or the fatigue at work, mm-hmm. I totally get it. Yeah. yeah.
And I would say that, you know, cost is manageable. So with anything you're buying as a consumer, if you want to buy better things, higher quality things, maybe you just buy less of it. So it's hard to say as a restaurateur and as a rancher and, you know, well, eat less beef, but that's exactly what you should do. Eat less, but eat the right
quality.
Beef. So figure out a way to incorporate more vegetables into your diet. When you eat beef, eat great beef, like Arizona grass-raised beef. And not only is it more nutritious, but it's more balanced and it's what our bodies were more meant to absorb. I mean, we all love to occasionally go out and get a 16-ounce ribeye or whatever, and that's all good. But to do that, you know, once a week or once a month is, you know, that's excessive and it's not necessary. I'd rather have a 4-ounce cut of beef a couple times a week than try to overload myself with beef. And then cost isn't so much of an issue when you teach yourself to plan meals like that. And, you know, at our restaurant, our portion sizes are never more than 4 ounces for any meat. And that's just because we want people to walk away feeling good, not, you know,
saturated,
over.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I would say that cost is only what, if you want to look at it that way, then yeah, it'll be a factor. But if you want to look at your overall plan and where you're spending your money, there's one little anecdote. Farmer Frank does this, and Joel Salatin, a very famous, you know, grass-raised farmer, says this, you know, I think it might have been Joel Salatin. So, a customer walked up at a farmer's market and said, "Why are your eggs so expensive?" And they were probably $5.50 a dozen or something like that for these wonderful pasture-raised organic eggs. As they're holding their cup of, you can imagine, latte with right. this and that and the other. And he asked, "Well, how much did your
coffee.
Iced latte cost?" You know, $6-7 wow. bucks. You know, you can feed... You can have 6 meals off of this dozen eggs. You certainly sure. much
and
more
you just
nutritious.
Spent, yeah, you just yeah. spent that $6.50 on,
right.
on this souped
it's
up.
It's all relative. Yeah.
It is all relative. That's an excellent story. excellent antidote. I keep seeing myself in your restaurant. And since I've only been there once, I wouldn't do it justice. Give us kind of the walk-in experience, because you've got a unique entrance and this just obviously hometown, really farm feel. Mm-hmm. Can you walk us through a little bit what that's like? And then, and Deborah, clearly you've been there.
Clearly.
So if you could chime in as well so that you can dote on him a little bit too.
Yeah, our restaurant is meant to be very casual. So you walk in and feel like it's got a little bit of a farmy feel to it. We want it to be kind of almost like you're walking into a friend's house is how we designed it. Our goal initially, you mentioned a farm to table thing, and we didn't want to throw that out there as like, we're this farm to table restaurant, because that gets kind of abused sometimes.
It's overused and a little diluted, I think.
Yeah, like the word gourmet or, you know, delicatessen, they've kind of lost their luster over the years. And so we wanted to just be a great sandwich shop. We come in and I would say the atmosphere is fine dining meets fast food, yeah. you know, counter service it's restaurant.
Casual.
And, yeah, it's very casual. You walk in, somebody's greeting you always and wants you to have a great experience. So, but the feel of the restaurant is very much like a farmhouse. We try to use some very farmy type of materials to build it, but all just so people felt comfortable and like they could start associating it. We wanted it to be come in for a great sandwich, soup, salad, glass of, you know, wine, a beer. But when you come in, you start learning a little bit about yes. the community and where your food comes from.
It's as much a dining experience as it is an educational opportunity.
Yes. And we have a lending library so you can put the screen away and maybe put, we let you write on a little bookmark your name and, you know, you can pull a book out and read a little bit. We have Mother Earth News and all these great magazines about agriculture and farming. So as you're there, you're kind of absorbed in this whole process. But again, a lot of folks just come in to have a great sandwich and that's great.
Yeah.
But we want it to be that as easy and quick of an experience, like you were going into any sandwich shop. But we also want you to be able to have a rich experience, understand where the food comes from, and ask as many questions as you want. Our staff is very well educated. And
at the risk of sounding woo-woo, what I got this term as you're describing that is coming there and having that educational and delicious dining experience where you feel like you're at a neighbor's home. My body will remember what it's like to have a quality meal. That's just something that I kind of visualize. Like you're helping us remember who we're supposed to be mm-hmm. in our bodies anyway.
Exactly.
And I love how Oren also, like, you can always count on the fact that there's going to be seasonal stuff too. Mm. Like he has these amazing peaches and they make all the stuff out of these peaches. Like it's really lovely. I love that.
Right. And
my favorite thing about Oren's restaurant is he's got this amazing smoker. It's ginormous and it's a beautiful thing. So every time I go there, I'm just like, wow, that is amazing. And it's just running.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah. And again, that's important when you're cooking with meats that maybe you're not accustomed to cooking with, like grass-raised beef. Sometimes folks get scared to cook with it
because they've
heard, oh, well, you have to be careful how you cook it and this and that. So, you know, we have the smoker is a big part of what we do and it does really well with grass-raised beef. We also have other types of cooking equipment and we share that information with our guests so that, you know, hey, how would you want to cook this at home? And I would be just as happy if somebody came in once every 2 months rather than once a week to eat. If they took away from it, you know what, I'm going to go find me some grass-raised beef and I'm going to figure out how to cook it at home because I've been so inspired by this meal. That's really what we want to do. And I know it's counterintuitive because we'd love you to come eat with us every week, but we've really accomplished our mission if you're doing it at home too.
Well, and even when you're describing a similar conversation around beef and how frequently we ought to be eating when it's quality, even though that's Deborah's livelihood, she's nodding her head yes, right? So you both are really committed to helping educate and helping us go back to the way that we naturally ought to be eating mm-hmm. and treating, of course, the cattle with care and love and dignity, really. That's a huge
For
piece
sure.
of it as well. Yeah. I remember that when we came through and it's been a couple months, you still have the little store area mm-hmm. where like, and it's been a while since we've talked by phone, but were they Japanese green beans? The purple, what were they?
Oh yeah, it was like a Chinese long bean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yes. I've never seen, these were the coolest beans. And Mike, my husband is the cook at our home, not me. I do the eating. And he's like, oh my gosh. And I think that we grabbed that and a couple other things. But it was fun to be able to purchase after we ate our lunch, purchase a few things then to prepare at home. Again, to your point that we got to go home and take responsibility for treating it lovingly, caringly, and know that we're putting really great stuff into our body.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you know what? When it's better for you, it's most likely going to taste better as well. So you don't have to do as much. I remember the days of, you know, buying a steak from whatever grocery store and, you know, adding Worcestershire sauce and Montreal seasoning just to get it to taste like right. something. And, you know, you don't have to do that. You know, you just let the beef taste the beef. It's wonderful. And that's the one thing I will say. I've learned so much from Deb and Tim Peterson, one of her partners who does a lot of the management of the actual beef processing operation, and just driving around with him for like 2 hours, I was like, oh my God, this is so much information. But he's so passionate about what it's going to be like when we're serving it. You know, yes, they're taking care of an animal and they're doing a great job with it, but there's a purpose behind that. It's ecological, but it's also, at the end of the day, we can't promote this type of agriculture if it doesn't taste good. So some of the things that I learned from Tim and from Deb about how they're raising these animals, it was very profound and changed my whole outlook on how to serve food. In many ways, you know, the smoker was a way for us to be able to do more with the beef and, you know, not be limited in any way. And I think the future of restaurants, you know, people talk about, well, the restaurant industry is always changing. It's going to fast casual. It's going to this. It's going to that. Really, I think the future of restaurants is being able to be dynamic and be able to work with whatever is available to us. And if we could get restaurateurs to get out of that mindset of, I have to serve a tomato 365 days a year, I have to be able to serve a steak every day, then I think guests will appreciate it, but the consumer has to be willing to reciprocate with continuing to come to that restaurant. So it's kind of a dance.
Our younger generations are more groomed for that.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I think they're longing for that. Educate me, let this be an experience and let me carry it back into my own kitchen. And I think they're also choosing to eat at home more. all of it is very exciting. Talk about how to write a menu. You mentioned at the beginning of the segment, and it's something that I never would have thought of, like going to your growers and to the farms and saying, what ought we be serving either this time of year? Or tell us a little bit more about the relationship and then how that translates to the menu.
Yeah. And I know, Deb, you have a really great bone broth program going.
Yes. Yeah. I wanted to hear about that.
And, you know, so that's, I think, something that is a phenomenal, you know, use of the animal and the bones. And I think that would be a good thing to talk about. As far as how we built our menu, we always ask the farmer or the rancher, you know, what's your biggest challenge? You know, we found out for instance, we buy our goat cheese from a gentleman out in Buckeye, Crow's Dairy. Wonderful guy, great dairyman. He's doing it the right way. I said, what's your biggest challenge? He said, I can't move cheese in the summer, and because the volume goes down so much in Phoenix, and I don't want to sell outside of Arizona, like, you know, and Arizona's a little slower in the summer. So we tried to figure out ways to incorporate his chef in the summer. So we introduced a goat cheesecake and, you know, how can we utilize his chef? And so we learned his business model. You know, he has a great feta cheese. His feta cheese, he can, you know, that has a longer shelf life. So he can produce that before the summer and it'll carry through the summer and no problem. But the chef, he actually has to get rid of goats in the summer because he's producing too much milk. He has to sell them. So it's such a shame. So now this becomes my mission of, how do I sell more goat milk in the summer? Like, I will stop at nothing to sell goat milk. So then we have a chef, a wonderful chef, Dennis Bagnasco. And that's when I go to Dennis and I say, we need to move at least 10 pounds of chef more a week. And he's like, what are you talking about?
And then he gets creative.
Yeah. And then we have a ton of fun with it. And it's the same with the beef, you know? So we asked Deb and Tim, you know, what we buy the whole animal. So that's a commitment we have now.
That's everything for us. That's full utilization. I don't have to think about, oh, what am I going to have left over from Oren's order this week? Because Oren's going to take all of it and he's going to use it some creative way. And you're never going to know, which is another beautiful thing about his restaurant, because there's going to be a special on this or that at any given time. Mm-hmm. And that's so, you know, you don't have that all the time. It's fun to go and be like surprised. So I love that. And that does make it much simpler. It's not such a struggle to have good carcass utilization is the term, but and that does make a huge difference because it makes it easier to know what your bottom line pricing is going to be and what your profit is going to be off of something when you're not always wondering if you're going to have to discount something to move it. And beef does not keep forever.
Right. It's a partnership. It's a partnership. That's what you're describing with all the people that you're talking about in the company, not companies, but these families you're talking about. It's a partnership. I'm anxious to hear about bone broth and what you're doing there.
So great segue broth, for that. Yes. So we have a USDA inspected kitchen. We make, after we've taken care of all of our cattle, we've slaughtered them, we have all these beautiful bones left over. And because our plant is small, we have these amazing butchers. They hand fabricate all these bones and we take them over to our kitchen and we put them in these ginormous kettles. And we cook them for a minimum of 48 hours, up to 72 hours with vegetables and water. And it just produces this amazing beef bone broth. We do chicken also from pastured chickens. And it just, at the end of the day, it's super healthy. It's 19 grams of protein per cup. And it's just a super delicious, and it's multiple uses. I mean, you can drink it, you can cook with it. It's a wonderful product. And at the end of the day, we're continuing to use, you know, things that may have been thrown away with no, you know, would have been in the garbage, but now it's not. And yes, it takes a lot more energy and people and all that, but I still feel like it's, at the end of the day, it's the right thing to do.
I was just going to say that it is absolutely the right thing to do.
Yeah,
yeah,
for sure.
So outside of providing beef for Farm Boy Restaurant, who else do you sell the beef to? And can consumers get the bone broth from you? Or is that strictly just a farm to restaurant relationship?
So we sell at all the natural grocer stores across Arizona. And they sell fresh cuts of beef and they sell bone broth. And we sell bone broth online, certainly, and all kinds of cuts of beef that are frozen. And it's delivered, if it's within the state, it's delivered the next day. We ship usually just on Tuesdays every week, and most of it's delivered out on Wednesday. And we sell to a ton of restaurants. We're in about 6 different distributors in the Valley. So we have lots of different outlets as far as restaurants are concerned. And chefs are really, there's so many chefs that I work with and they are amazing. And a lot of them are very into real food. And that's where it starts. Mm-hmm. That's where the transition in my mind begins with people like Warren that are trying to make a difference. And I think then people start trying it and tasting it and opening their mind up to something different, something local, something really good for you.
So, Warren, do we have to eat at or buy our produce and our meat from Whole Foods, or can we do it? How can we do it?
Well, I think really the farmers market is the number one opportunity to really connect with local farmers. You know, there's a great saying from one of Michael Pollan's books, "Shake the hand that feeds you." And we use that as one of our slogans on our employees' uniforms. And the reason that I think that's an important thing, you know, for you to look your farmer or rancher in the eye and say, you know, how do you do this? I just want to know, or why is this more nutritious, or why does it cost this much? You know, that it's important to hear that and understand it. And it's important for children to hear that and understand it, and to really appreciate how much effort goes into food. And again, when you look at cost, yeah, if you go to a farmer's market, generally you'll probably pay a little bit more. But from a freshness and a nutritional standpoint, I would say that's probably the best choice. And then there's so much going on right now in the Valley and Tucson with these intermediaries, I'm going to call them, but these third parties who are really passionate about connecting farmers with consumers. And there's just, I'm seeing it now that we've opened Farm Boy, we're being approached by a lot of these folks who are literally just driving a truck around all these farms and picking up products and bringing them to either restaurants or a drop-off point for consumers. So they're not exactly, it's not like going to Amazon and buying something, you know, you have to seek them out and find them, but they are there. There's quite a few now. And I would say like Local First Arizona does a really nice job of promoting some of these folks. And we're utilizing some of them because we want them to succeed. And it's very hard to succeed. You know, the markups on for somebody trying to deliver an already pretty costly product are very slim. It's hard to mark that up too much because no one will buy it. So, you know, you have to support them so they're critical mass is met, and then it becomes more of a viable system. But yeah, I mean, Deb's already doing it. You know, that you can order beef online and have it to your house the next day. I mean, that's wonderful. You could, if you don't mind driving over to Sky Harbor Airport, you can pick up right from Farmer Frank at his farm.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, so if you're willing to do that, you know, if you can change your habits and your mindset around going to the grocery store and say, you know, maybe just once a month, let's go buy our groceries at the farmer's market and let's see what happens, then maybe it can progress from there.
I think the difference in the way, especially vegetables and stuff, the difference of the way they taste when you get them home and you've made this fabulous meal. And my problem is my husband's like, you don't need to buy that many vegetables for 1 week. I'm like, we need these. They're delicious. They're so much better. And it's just, it's so worth it.
And I thought you were going to say when we buy so many, and we do it because it's convenient if we're just buying, you know, at a typical grocery store, but there's no flavor and they last longer because they shouldn't. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know what
right?
I mean? That's where I thought you were headed with that. But you're coming from a delicious standpoint. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's nothing worse for me than looking, you know, cutting into a peach. You mentioned the delicious peaches at Farm Boy and cutting into a peach.
No comparison.
And there's no flavor. And I end up having to throw a couple of them away or maybe all of them away because it's not tasty and it's not providing any nutritional value for me. Yeah.
Yeah. My kids will like, if I go to the farmer's market and buy sprouts, for example, I mean, I can put those in their lunch every day and it'll be gone. If I go to the store and buy sprouts, they will be in the lunchbox when mm-hmm. it comes home. Mm-hmm.
Again, their bodies know the difference. Their bodies are wanting to have what we need to have from our food. Yeah.
Yeah. And we use at Farm Boy, we use a little device called a refractometer. And it's really cool. They're about $30 to buy on Amazon or wherever. It's a little prism and it's like, it looks like a little telescope. And what you do is like, if you have a peach or a tomato or whatever, there's like a lens, you squeeze a little juice onto the lens and then you look inside of it and the light refracts through it and it gives you a reading, like a number. And then you have a chart. It's called a Brix chart, BRIX. And that really tells you the quality of the soil that this was grown in and the ripeness of the fruit. So for instance, there's a poor, an average, a good, and an excellent rating. So if you buy a peach from, say, Whole Foods, as an example, and you spent, you know, X amount of dollars on it, you can check it against a peach that you buy from the farmer's market. And this is going to tell you, okay, this one registered as an average and this one average as an excellent. And then you can make those decisions. Then you can apply a value to what you're spending and saying, well, if this was an excellent, it means I'm getting more nutrition out of this peach. I'm getting more flavor. It's more valuable to me. I'm going to spend the money for that. And if you pay attention and you go to Whole Foods or a farmer's market, you'll see folks with refractometers.
I'm going to have to start looking. Yeah. I've never heard of that before. That's fascinating.
My staff loves it. When we whip out the refractometer, they're like, oh, cool.
Very scientific. Yeah, exactly. You mentioned Local First Arizona. And again, our studio is inside MAC 6 in Tempe. It's also the Conscious Capitalism headquarters for Arizona, which is an international movement. If you're not familiar with it, Local First is very involved. And it's really just around doing good business, being passionate about what you're providing our community, making sure all stakeholders are taken care of in a loving way, whether it's vendors, customers, our employees, And you said, you know, the money isn't the thing for you. And it's okay to make really good money doing what we're doing. That's how I would loosely define conscious capitalism. And Thomas will be on with us in December. Kimber Lanning was on one of our shows called Business Solutions Radio with John Deiter. And she was talking about what her focus is right now. These rural communities, right? We've got this Metro Phoenix and we're all kind of coming together and helping each other. But what about those restaurateurs, those farmers, anybody who has these businesses outside of the metro area? How can we be of great support? And it sounds like you've already spoken to that a little bit about some of these third party connectors. Mm-hmm. And it's really fun to hear Local First come up several times. I'm really pleased that when I get to sit and have these conversations with local business owners, I'm constantly reminded and having to be educated around how to be a better consumer advocate for Arizona business. You know, I used to be that gal who would go to one of those big box brand folks for my morning coffee all the time and have a bunch of, you know, crap in it. I've eliminated all the crap and now I'm really an advocate for a couple local spots for coffee. I've just simplified. To your point earlier, as we continue to do that, even if it's just first once a month, and then the more we get in a routine and the more educated, the more help we have from people like you, the better we all win. It really is a fantastic.
And we find that, I think all of us find that once consumers are more down the road, once consumers are more educated, there's more opportunity for all of us. I mean, I feel that way all the time. And I think that I've always tried to position our business so that we would be able to take on bigger and bigger opportunities. And I always wonder, well, when will that day be that a grocery store that's local would like to put us on their shelves and people that can actually buy something from their home state? And it's delicious and it's healthy. I mean, I love saying that because that's something that we look for to support all of our community, if you will.
Yep. That's around sustainability.
And I think, as you make a great point about looking outside the valley, but also there's a real need for providing nutrition
right here.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of our communities in Phoenix and they're underserved when it comes to good food and having access to nutritious food all the time. So, you know, you might have a lot of fast food joints in a particular part of town, but that's certainly not helping the situation with diabetes and, you know, childhood obesity and those things. And I don't claim to be an expert on any of that, but I do know that if you had access to good food and it was easy and maybe not too expensive, you know, or you learned how to plan a meal within your budget, then why not? You know, we should be able, we need to bring this food to all the communities. I think probably if you looked at the health of different parts of town, if there was like a heat map for health and nutrition, you could probably guess where, you know, that we're going to be thriving in, you know, in our nutritional inputs or however you want to look at it. But I think there's a real need. I mean, part of me, you know, everyone asks when I'm going to open another Farm Boy and it's going to be a while, but when we do, I'm torn, you know, do you want to go into a nice location that you know will do well, or do you want to go into a community that really wants it and needs it? Maybe they don't even know they need it.
Yep. So, and they likely don't. Yeah. I think it might've been Kimber. And I'm trying to remember who it was that spoke to just that we have to help our lower income neighbors get better educated. And it might even been Downtown Phoenix Incorporated as well. I can't remember, but really talking about let's share the responsibility around helping those families, those kids, bring them the food that they need and create walking experiences for them so that they don't have to, you know, feel like they have to go outside of their environment. Teach them how to cultivate some of the land that might be available, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm giving Kimber credit for it, and I'm sure she'd love that. But mm-hmm.
Even just the education that goes along with the understanding that that's kind of what you need to be able to do, even if you're cooking at home, you know, mm-hmm. just to know that your family knows or is receiving the kind of nutrition that they should be. A lot about, you know, what Warren has been bringing up about being able to have access to that and plan your meals around that, regardless of the price point, you can do it, you know?
And again, and I've heard the saying before, I just had forgotten it, that what I'm paying for in quality, nutritious food today may be and likely more expensive, but down the road, how I'm showing up, I'm able to focus, I'm able to sleep, I'm able to do what I need to do and find joy in my life and not be ill as a result of putting crap in my body, it far outweighs the cost and makes it so much more worth it to spend a little bit more in the moment, as opposed to having to look at doctor bills down the road.
Well, I just I'm saving $50 a month in vitamins right now that I used to buy.
Right. That alone in supplements, right? I know one of the things that you had shared with me was the In Defense of Food book, right? Michael Pollan's book. To that note, right? Around supplements and vitamins.
Yeah, it's almost like a waste of money, you know, if you're eating the right foods. And so, you know, there's just an easy cost replacement. You know, how much I can't imagine. I look at the amount of money I was spending on vitamins because it's almost like a fear of starting your day without them. And I just listened to one chapter of his book on Audible and there I was like, what am I doing? You know, and I just really focused on making sure, you know, I'm just eating the food that I'm serving now and eating more of it. And I just kicked the vitamins and, you know, and it was kind of hard for me, but just from a routine thing.
Yes.
But I would venture to say that a lot of folks are spending maybe even close to $100 or more a month in vitamins and supplements when you could just get it from the food. So that's an easy trade. And the food tastes a lot better.
Well, and it's a lot more effective nutrition for sure. I mean, it's like the difference between some of it is very simulated, even though it's
saying
a
that
vitamin.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Right. This has been a treat. You might not likely believe it's already been an hour. and we always have people say, wow, that went so fast. I'm educated. I'm thrilled. I'm so excited that you took me up on the opportunity to come and be here with us on Phoenix Business Radio X and to bring Deborah Burnett with the Chief of Beef. I love that. Do you have a badge? Chief of Beef.
I should, yeah. Right?
With the Arizona Grass-Raised Beef Company. And before we close out the show, I would love for each of you to make sure you tell our listeners where they can get a hold of you and where you are on social. But before, and we'll start with you, Oren. Who is the sweet gal? Do you remember who it was that gave my card or made sure that we connected?
Yeah.
She was fantastic. And I know she is a representative of the rest of your employee and team as well. She's not the only star.
Yeah, that's Danny Bullard.
Yes,
she's
Danny.
Our general manager. She's worked with me before. She's done a great job. She's very passionate about what she's doing. And she came over from the fast food world. So she's really loving this opportunity to learn more about where food comes from. And she just planted her first watermelon seed. So she's really just having a lot of fun with it.
She's delightful. Yeah. Obviously, anytime we have a dining experience or we go to buy something anywhere, whoever's there to greet us, it's not typically the owner. It's an employee, but they become, right, that experience for us. Mm-hmm. And so everything you've described about Farm Boy, before even mentioning Danny, she was that. It was warm. It was like talking to a friend and a neighbor, and she was helping to educate. Really, that passion that you have certainly comes through in her. And then I could see that happening that day we were there. We need to get back again. We don't live too close, but it's definitely worth a trip. So tell us where you're located and also where can we find you out in the World Wide Web?
Okay, sure. Sure. Well, we're located in South Chandler at the intersection of Alma School and Queen Creek. So real easy to get to from the 10 or the 202. As far as online, we're at farmboyaz.com. Our Facebook is facebook.com/farmboyaz. We try to really help connect potential guests and our guests with our farm partners and our farmers and ranchers through social media. So we try to tell the story. Every morsel of food that's served at our restaurant has a story behind it. And we want to be able to portray that, but we also don't want to overwhelm everybody. So online, we have some really nice information about all of our farmers and producers.
Love it. Love it. Love it. Thank you so much. And Thank you for thinking to have Deborah Burnett join us as well with Arizona Grass-Raised Beef Company. Tell us how we can get a hold of you. You already mentioned you're in stores, of course, but tell us where we can find you and learn more.
So online, we're at azgrassraisedbeef.com. And we're also on Facebook and we're also on Instagram. So if you just look that up, you'll find us there. We have a store online where people can order from and pretty easy.
Wonderful. What a treat to have both of you here today.
Thank you so much.
I'm excited. I've got a little slower pace so I can start getting more in a habit of taking better care of my family nutritionally. And we have been kind of making a habit of going to these farmer markets, which is, again, at the top of the show, I mentioned that I ran into your partners at the booth at the Old Town Scottsdale Farmers Market. And I will say, as we close out, I was noticing as I was walking around at the kinds of people that were there, especially, you know, in the produce area and buying things healthy, vibrant. Like you could see, you know, if we did a study and we said, okay, take a look at who's at the fast food restaurants. And by the way, I will admit, I am a fast food gal. There's something about, you know, some of those foods that I grew up on that I still love today. So I'm not knocking it. But I think when we look at who has the ability to focus and longevity and joy in life and really being healthy, it's the folks who are making these wise choices around their food. And again, we all win when we're doing that. So thank you again for being here. I look forward to more conversations and learning more about both of your companies. You've been listening to Phoenix Business Radio with Business Radio X, broadcasting live from within the Max 6 and Conscious Capitalism Arizona studio. Some media leans left, some lean right, and we lean business. Until next time, I'm Karen Nowicki.